Support for Live and 225 is provided in part by the Grimm Family Center for Organic Production and Research at Cal Poly. For more information or to support the center, please visit organic.calpoly.edu. That's organic.calpoly.edu for the Grimm Family Center for Organic Production and Research at Cal Poly. Support for Live and 225 is provided in part by AgCom Central. Visit AgCom Central on twitch.tv/AgComCentral or on our website, agcomcentral.com, where you can follow our social media. That's twitch.tv/AgComCentral for AgCom Central. Support for Live and 225 is provided in part by the Department of Agricultural Education and Communication at Cal Poly. Visit aged.calpoly.edu to register for our programs or to show your support. That's aged.calpoly.edu for the Department of Agricultural Education and Communication at Cal Poly.
Good morning, and thank you all for joining us here live in 225. This is Season 1, Episode 7 of our podcast series, all about organic agriculture. We've been heavily talking about different methods and ideas within the organic industry, but we have yet to discuss how the ideas and how people get their information about organics and what drives them to purchase and eat organically. We're here with our panelists today. We have Melissa, who is the production specialist for this episode. Her group worked really hard to get this episode to us here on the podcast. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We have Dr. Matt Grishup, who is the...
I'll say it.
Okay.
Director for the Grimm Family Center for Organic Production and Research here at Cal Poly, our new organic center.
Yes, and you're one of the regulars on our podcast. Yep. And
the lead expert, actually.
The lead expert on everything organic. So thank you for joining us again.
Of course. It's always a pleasure.
And we have Dr. Mike sitting in on the panel as well. He is our professor for this podcasting class and is our kind of fearless leader.
I am fearless, and I am a leader, but I'm also very interested in, you know, how this episode plays into
communication
with a wider audience.
Yeah, this will be super fun. And also joining us on Zoom, we have
special guest
Valeria Carrasco. Thank you for joining us today, and we're super excited to hear a little bit more about your experience as an influencer in the organic sphere and kind of what that's all about. So super excited, super glad that you're here. Before I begin, I'd like to first restate the definition of organics for any listeners who are a little unsure or new to the podcast. So an organic system is a system that integrates cultural, biological, and mechanical practices that foster the cycling of resources, promote ecological balance, and conserve biodiversity. As most of us know, with the growing online presence and information online, on social media platforms and beyond, information can be overwhelming and trends will surface due to media and influencers on social media platforms. So like a big example of this is TikTok has been super big in the past few years, Instagram, lots of other things like YouTube, Twitter, all sorts of platforms are really just emerging, and as a result of that, a lot of different trends have arose, with which we'll talk about more in terms of the organic sphere and how that influences us. Like I said, organic has slowly been rising to the surface of consumers' minds as a healthier alternative to conventionally produced crops and livestock to minimize inputs into the foods they are consuming, such as fertilizers, pesticides, and hormones, which we've talked about in the past with our episodes. So, going off of that, this leads us into our first topic, which is diet culture, and specifically organic diet trends and the media influence on diet culture itself.
Wow.
Yeah. So going into it, we are just going to be kicking off the discussion about diet trends in general, and then we're going to be leading into organic trends. So over time, there's been countless diet trends that have emerged throughout the decades.
What's your favorite?
The most prevalent diet trend I can think of is paleo, which when I was in high school and I played high school sports, a lot of gals on my water polo team would be on the paleo diet.
Wow.
Or keto. And they would say that it would help them become a better player because of the nutrition aspect of it. But diets are very subjective, which a lot of research has shown. So it works differently for people in different ways.
Absolutely.
So, again, there's lots of different diets out there. There's the classic vegetarian or vegan diets. There's keto, which I mentioned, which is low to no carbs and high fats and proteins. And then paleo is like lean meats, fish, fruits, and vegetables, no carbs, kind of a more
basically eating
primal,
like a caveman.
Basically eating the caveman vibes up in this house.
I have one to add to that.
Ooh, okay.
Intermittent fasting. That's something that I do pretty often, especially since my course load this quarter is like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I would get up, work out, don't eat breakfast, go through my day until like 3 o'clock. That's pretty heavy fast.
I think I've been doing that accidentally this quarter.
Yeah.
I wake up and I have my coffee and then I'm like, oh, it's 3 p.m. and I haven't eaten anything.
Yeah.
That's not good. So I just wanted to ask the panelists here today, have any of you tried any of these diet fads that have gone around on social media or just around the public sphere?
Yeah.
I know that Valeria, would you like to add to the discussion?
Yes, I did a smoothie one.
Oh boy.
Oh, it was like a 3 days.
All I did was drink 8 smoothies a day. It was horrible. I was in a bad mood. And it was supposed to help me with bloating. It did not do that. So I don't know if I would recommend it, to be honest.
Yeah. I haven't personally gone in any diet like fads, but I did have one of my water polo coaches actually back in high school, which funny thing, she is a dietitian. She went on this fad diet where you could only eat 300 calories a day.
Oh, I
which,
know that one.
I don't know much about that, but I don't think that a grown
like
woman
unsafe?
Should be, I don't think a grown woman should be eating 300 calories a day. That's like the calorie intake for a child.
a very small child.
Yeah. And even so, the caloric content of like milk
is
pretty high. So
yeah,
you'd have to eat a little bit even as a child.
Yeah.
I have tried two specific ones. I did a 5-day water fast one time.
You only drink water for 5 days?
And even then, like, because in the first 2 days, your body loses all of the dependency on sugar. So you feel crabby in the first 2 days, and then you just feel kind of hungry or like light. You feel very light.
How was that for you?
It was pretty hard because mentally we're...
You're like, I'm hungry.
Yeah, mentally we have this idea that we need to eat like daily. And so like your mouth salivates and your stomach has triggers. And then by the fifth day, you're like, all right, your body needs some sustenance to keep going. Because I was still trying to like work out and go to work and stuff. And then I actively did the intermittent fasting, especially when I'm lifting heavy. Because that like reduces the science says it reduces the amount of sugars in your muscles or the carbs in your muscles, and so when you expel those and you work out and you eat after that, the carbs and sugars don't stay on your body. It just goes straight into metabolism and processes it out as that. But the most effective diet that helped me lose like 50 pounds was no carbs, no sugar. I just ate a lot of protein and a lot of vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
And it came off like that.
So it's
6 months.
The keto diet.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
I cheated a little bit, but like.
So I've done intermittent fasting for 7 or 8 years now.
Nice.
And mostly when I was really hardcore, it was like a 20 hours fasting, 4 hours eating. But most recently, it's really more of the 16-8 variety. And this morning I ate a little bit because I wanted to have some blood sugar for this.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes I just don't eat until lunch. I mean, you know, 1 o'clock, and I stop eating around 8.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did paleo pretty hardcore for about 2.5 years.
I didn't figure you for a paleo man.
but now I guess, you know, the diet, I don't know if it's a fad, but the whole, you know, flexitarian concept is one that I really promote. And
what's flexitarian?
So a flexitarian is basically, you know, think vegetarian who occasionally eats meat. That's it. So you think of meat more as a garnish, and I will still eat a animal protein in a big chunk every once in a while, but from a personal health and environmental standpoint, you know, the math is pretty clear that, you know, animal products are difficult to digest. And there's a whole bunch of good research pointing at cancers and other things. And then also they're very calorically intensive in terms of production. And what it really just comes down to is, you know, to produce one unit of, you know, animal calorie, you need at the very least 10 units of plant calorie. So from a industrial ag standpoint, you know, every calorie of meat you eat, and you know, unless you're a hunter, is, you know, represents anywhere from 10 to 30 calories of plant material that had to be produced, and all the water and impact on soil and everything else. So I'm not trying to get preachy or anything, but it's just straight up math. But, and then the Mediterranean diet's another one that that was pretty big 10 or 12 years ago. My parents do that one pretty much. But personally, I think, you know, the important thing for health is to avoid processed foods as much as possible. Eat whole foods. I mean, that's what we evolved eating for, you know,
so do I
years.
I just not defeather the chicken and just
yeah, just eat the whole thing.
Just eat the
just
whole chicken.
And all. Yeah. No, more like by processed foods, I mean, you know, highly refined your carbohydrates in particular. So, you know, if you eat whole grains versus a refined white flour, which is basically just, you know, a simple, it's a polysaccharide, but your body breaks it down into disaccharides and monosaccharides in minutes. And if you have a, you know, depending on your personal metabolism, I have like a European peasant metabolism. My body's happy to have sugar and simple carbs because it's like, yay, you know, winter is coming.
We're going to survive the famine.
Exactly. We're going to be fat and happy over the winter. But the winter never comes.
Dr. Mike is
food.
Dr.
Yeah. But I know other people who can just eat sugar like crazy and it just,
falls,
you know,
off,
they've got the hummingbird mentality. It just, they need it just to keep going. But that's not me. I'm
me.
Yeah.
You just eat a bunch of junk and it falls off.
Well, I mean, I try not to, but I can if I want to.
Yeah, Melissa, you look like someone who's got a fast metabolism.
Yeah.
Yeah, not me. It's glacial.
Anyways, we had some laughs earlier, but I just wanted to divert the discussion into one of the biggest trends I would believe that
is currently
going around social media, just the lifestyle of eating organic. So the organic diet trend, I feel, is something that's gaining a lot of popularity. Although organic production does make up a more minute percentage of overall organic or overall agricultural production, over the past few years, we've seen an 8% growth in organic sales compared to a 1% sixth increase in sales of conventional food products. So it's organic produce and organic production is definitely on the up and coming, as it has been for the past few decades. But I just wanted to talk a little bit about how the organic diet trend is resurging. And Melissa, if you'd like to talk about the cutaway video that your production team has created.
Bring the mic a little closer to you.
So yesterday we asked people if they have ever bought anything organic because they were influenced to off of social media.
Whoa.
Since everyone knows that organics is a big thing right now. Organic agriculture is all over everything. This school, this is an ag school, so we hear about it a ton here.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like the perfect place to ask people about if they buy anything organic, and we got some interesting answers.
I'd just like to say here, Valeria, you may not be able to hear it, but we will explain the video after. I think you should, but you may not. So, all right, great.
We're here today in the UU area at Cal Poly, asking people if they've ever bought anything organic because they were influenced to from influencers or celebrities on social media. Have you ever bought anything organic because you were influenced to off of social media?
Yes, and my mom.
Do you remember what it was?
Usually like fruit or vegetables, things like that.
I have not.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I think I've bought like organic eggs off, like just from the store because I saw it on social media, maybe.
No, not really.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
No.
Okay, thank you.
I don't think I have. I feel like most of the stuff I get are because of her. So if she has, then I don't know.
Not that I can think of.
Not mainly from social media, mainly from my mom.
just like do it anyways.
I don't think I have been ever.
Okay. Not through social media, but just through like different informational posters and stuff. Yeah.
Nah.
I don't think so. I don't think so either.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, I have.
What was it? Do you remember?
I think I saw a video of a girl going to like Sprouts or CalFresh. Yeah. And buying like this organic like juice that helps like, I don't know, with sleeping and like calorie deficit. So I just tried it out, did not work.
I feel like organic things are really expensive.
Yeah.
So the
cost outweighs.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever they're saying.
I'm definitely easily influenced, but I don't know about organic product influenced.
Okay. Makes sense.
The price is important.
The price. Yeah.
Okay.
I would have to say no.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Well, I'll let Melissa just summarize the video and then pass it over to probably Valeria, yeah?
Mm-hmm. Most of the people that we asked kind of looked at me like I was crazy and were like, no, I have not bought anything organic because an influencer told me to. But there were a few. Like, the one girl said she bought juice and it didn't work. That kind of sucks, but maybe it worked for a different goal. Who knows?
Who knows?
Organic isn't just a magic label. I mean,
there's inputs that go into it.
Yeah,
extensive, like, inputs that we've talked about.
It really depends what matters to you and like if the benefits from it being something organic are important to you or not, and if that's not important to you, of course you're gonna say it doesn't work.
Like, yeah, or oh, it's too expensive, I'm not gonna buy it.
Yeah.
But as we've talked about before on the show, like, there's definitely so many benefits to organic agriculture, and I wanted to pass it over to Valeria to talk about your experience with organics and especially your partnership with Bloom, which is a nutrition company.
So I wouldn't say I'm 100% like just organics, but I did start working out real a lot probably my senior year, and I have started to take care of what I eat and try to buy. In my house, we have chickens, so we actually don't buy eggs. We just use them from the farm. Here, now that I'm in Colombia, the other day, I was like, Grandma, why does this milk taste different? Because we went to my uncle's ranch, and my grandma gets the milk from there instead of buying it. So it's kind of like, I mean, if it's important to you that they don't have, because they have no pesticides, no type of chemicals or anything like that, I mean, which does help. But my thing with Bloom, they reached out to me and I had seen it all over TikTok and I wanted to buy it, but I didn't because it was pricey. It was like $50 for a little tube of powder.
No, no.
And then when they reached out, I was like, that's honestly crazy because I never thought that they were gonna give it to me for free and then pay me on top of it.
Holy crap.
So I started using it and it helps for digesting, bloating, and kind of for like just everything gut related. And you just take a scoop every day in the morning and it honestly has helped me with bloating. So that's
yeah.
Awesome.
Is it a like a plant derived powder that you just?
Yeah, it's actually a powder from fruit and vegetables extract. It includes fiber, prebiotics, and antioxidants. I just got that down from the tube.
Very cool.
I have a question for her. What has been your experience with influencing the audience that you're attached to? I want you to explain in that, like, how many people are following you, which platforms you're on, and then what has been your response to the content that you are creating, and explain a little bit about the content that you create.
So I'm mostly on TikTok. I believe I have 68,000 as of yesterday or something around there. And on Instagram, I have around, I believe, 20,000. I'm not completely sure on my numbers on Instagram.
More than that.
I'm mostly on TikTok, so I post a lot of like get readies with me's or daily vlogs or story times. That's what I'm mostly known for. So I'm like those influencers that talk to the audience, not really just like sing songs and little dances. So I think my audience engages a lot more with me because they know me as a person, not really just like, oh, like look how
not
I dance.
Just doing a dance.
There's a lot of different types of influencers. So there's the ones like me that I'm more like me, like I'm my actual own brand because I sell myself in a way. And then, so my audience actually really engaged with it because I get a discount. So when they use my discount code, I get a percentage of that.
Mm.
So So I believe my audience trusts me a lot because I show who I am, and it came in perfectly with me because I do a lot of get ready with me for the gym. So I kind of just put in one of those videos and it got really good feedback. And for example, I got the product for free, and then for each video I posted, I got $200, which is not a lot. But when I was working at Target making $15 an hour, I'm like, that's 2 days of work in a 1 minute video.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. And then the other thing that I wanted to come back to is the idea that you talked about the taste of the food that is from your family's production. So go into that a little bit more, because I want to understand, like we have discussed on the panel here, you know, the idea that organically produced food will carry a different flavor profile. So yeah, talk about that a little bit more.
Okay, so for me, on the milk, it was really like, because I'm used to milk in the US, you buy it at Target, Walmart, whatever. And then my grandma is pouring it in a Coke bottle because that's where they put it. And I'm like, Grandma, what are you doing? And she's like, oh, it's milk from your uncle's ranch. I'm like, okay. And it's a lot stronger. Like, it tastes a lot more like milk, if that makes sense. And eggs, when I eat store-bought eggs, they don't really have that much of a strong taste. And the eggs from my ranch, they're like really strong. So I don't know if that has anything to do because they don't have chemicals or what, but they definitely, the things that I've tried that are organic have a much stronger taste. And even shape, like for example, Melissa's parents, they grow like tomatoes and stuff like that. So I would always get that from when I lived in California. Really? And they're way bigger. And sometimes they don't look as pretty because, you know, at the store they have like perfect, and then the actual tomatoes are big and like they'll have like little bug bites, but they taste also stronger. So I don't know if that's with everything or just certain products.
So you think they have stronger flavor profiles on organic foods than conventional?
Definitely.
Wow.
That might also be attributed to the level of processing that goes into the products.
Well, it's.
I know that for the United States, all milk has to be pasteurized in order to be sold to consumers.
Well, and not only that, if you look at dairy production streams, you know, a dairy farm has a bunch of cows. They milk the cows. The milk gets transferred to a tank truck. The tank truck goes usually to a milk plant, unless they're vertically integrated and they do all the stuff on site, which some dairies do, but most of them don't. When that milk goes to the plant, it's then actually the protein and the fat are actually separated. So, like, one thing that I think a lot of people don't understand is the way they get 2% milk is not, there aren't 2% cows. Right. Just no, like there aren't chocolate cows either.
They separate
separate everything out, and then they back mix it. And then there's actually a lot of things that get pulled out during that process. Like you'll see dairy solids and all casein and all kinds of things that are diverted off of that process. They get used in all kinds of industrial food applications. But then, of course, it's also pasteurized. It's also homogenized. So we did a raw dairy share in Michigan for a while, my family, and it was, you know, you get the cream on the top, and it definitely has a different flavor. But then even on top of that, you know, one of the differences that you will see between an organic milk and a conventional milk, and we had a guest talking about this a little bit, actually, Kelly from CCOF. Organic, if you're growing cows organically, if you're using organic husbandry practices, they have to, there's a percentage of their food that has to be grass, has to be forage. In a conventional dairy, there are no requirements for that. So most of our conventional dairy cows are fed corn and soybeans and alfalfa, which are not things that cows really evolved eating.
Yeah, they don't usually
eat grass.
They don't eat soybeans in the wild.
Right. I mean, they might occasionally.
They might.
Right. I mean, well, especially, you know, ages ago in Asia, because there wouldn't be, well, there weren't cows here either, I guess. But so that's part of it. And I suspect that, you know, if you're getting locally produced milk, they're probably grass-fed cows. I mean, they're probably, and that definitely changes the flavor. I mean, with raw dairy and the taste of the milk changes over season with the blend of plants that the cow's actually eating.
Exactly.
But then also, I mean, I don't know, maybe your uncle or your mom pasteurized that milk or homogenized it, but I suspect they didn't. Was there a thick layer of cream on the top? Did it separate?
Yeah, so
probably it's like straight out of the cow raw milk. And
literally, they milk it into the Coke bottle.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, the first time you try a raw milk product, it's kind of mind blowing because it is. And
it's so different from if you've grown up your entire life drinking store bought milk.
And it's crazy. And then with the eggs, as someone who's raised poultry at a small scale, chickens are, I think anyone who's raised chickens will probably identify with this a little bit. They're like little dinosaurs. They're like little velociraptors. They're horrific predators. I have seen chickens take on frogs, snakes, mice in my old backyard.
I saw them take on my brother.
Yeah, what? Exactly. Oh yeah, roosters especially. Yeah. They'll take on anything. They don't care. You know, they're like honey badgers. So they you know, in the wild, they have a very diversified diet. So they're eating a lot of critters, little critters, as long as medium-sized critters, as well as plant material. And that definitely changes the taste and even appearance of eggs. I mean, typically a backyard egg with a chicken that has more of a natural diversified life, the yolk is going to be a much oranger experience, and they definitely have a flavor. If you've ever had the misfortune of eating chickens that were fed on fish meal, you get fishy eggs. It's kind of, I mean, if you're used to it, I suppose it's fine. The one time I had it, it was like.
Is that like just, you can buy that in a store, or is it just kind of like a draw?
No, it's more of a regional kind of thing. Okay. I think I was in South America the one time I experienced it, and it was weird. It was like, why do these eggs taste like sardines?
Well.
You know, and then we figured it out.
Yeah.
But that has a lot to do with it, and that's I think, one of the, you know, one of the interesting things when we think about food supply is, on top of organics, it's really the locality and freshness of it. If you're eating foods that are grown in your local environment, they're typically going to be fresher and they're probably going to taste better.
Mm-hmm. And your body can probably handle it better.
Exactly.
Since it's the environment you're from. Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you have a long familial line history with that food in place, which I think is less and less the case as we all move around more and more.
Yeah.
But I think that's really interesting. If you look at like the broader studies of organic, like flavor profiles and health benefits, the ones that have been really clear and I think are very irrefutable are, there was some great work done at University of Washington where they monitored pesticide content in people's urine, pee. And they looked at that where they fed a group an entirely organic diet, and then they switched them to a conventional, and they did the opposite, I believe. And what they showed was that, you know, they could definitely detect more synthetic pesticides in folks who were not on the organic diet, and that it came back if they went back on a conventional diet. And it went away if you went from a conventional diet to an organic diet, which makes a lot of sense because, you know, if it's certified organic and...
you're not going to have those synthetic pesticides.
Those synthetics are not going to be there. The nutrient density question is way more complicated because our food system's so globalized. I mean, a lot of flavor, like in the tomato example, I mean, there's some old folksy songs talking about like homegrown tomatoes for a reason. I mean, a tomato that you pick right off the vine in your backyard.
Oh, it's going to taste like the best tomato you've ever
had. When it's picked.
Exactly.
If I'm shipping that tomato 500 miles, I'm going to pick it a little before it's ripe, whether it's from a greenhouse or it's produced outdoors, because it needs to survive that journey.
Exactly.
Going from having a garden and fruit trees with anything I could want at my fingertips to living here and having to buy all of my produce at a grocery store has been so hard. Like, I don't even know how to shop anymore.
Speaking of health, you were talking about health benefits earlier in your discussion, and I thought that would be a perfect segue into one of Valeria's TikTok videos.
Oh, great.
I think that has some of the Bloom product in it. So Valeria, if you're comfortable with that, we can go ahead and play that and then we can discuss it later.
All right. Hello girls, hoy voy a enseñar un paso muy importante de mi morning routine, que es cuando me tomo todos mis veggies que ocupo para mi día a diario. Estoy trabajando con una marca que se llama Bloom, a lo mejor han escuchado de ella. Es un polvito que literalmente viene con todos los greens que ocupas para tus días. Y es tan fácil como echarle una scoop a tu vaso de agua, tu jugo de naranja, un licuado verde. Yo solamente lo hago en un licuado verde, pero como no tengo tiempo, me tengo que ir para la escuela como ya, entonces lo voy a hacer en un vaso de agua. Vienen diferentes sabores en toda la página, vienen de mango, de fresa, todos los sabores que puedan imaginar. Y también en la página puedes encontrar el mixer, un vasito, un shaker, obviamente los powders. Vienen de todo lo que tienes que encontrar en la página web. Entonces es nomás un polvito y que en esta scoop viene todo para ayudarte con la digestión, con bloating y con tu immune system. Y lo echas en un vaso de agua o lo que quieran y lo hacen mix. Y es súper recomiendo tomárselo en la mañana. Lo puedes tomar a la hora que quieran, pero en la mañana como que ayuda para jumpstart tu metabolism. Y simplemente lo tomas y ya está todo. Cheers.
This is a great reminder for all my students and anyone who's listening to the podcast. Brush up on a second language, especially Spanish, if you're in California.
Yep.
For sure.
Absolutely.
Definitely. Valeria, would you mind just evaluating a little bit more about the video? And again, just kind of how you got into this partnership.
So I actually couldn't hear the audio, but from what I remember, I was explaining what it does for you, the benefits, which I told you guys was like the gut health, digestion and bloating, and helps with your immune system. So I will usually take it before the gym. So it helps me, like, I don't know, just start my day with my greens. And the way they reached out to me is they DM'd me on Instagram and they asked me for my email. They say they love my content and they wanted to reach more of a content in like Mexico and Spanish speaking countries. And they thought I was good for the job, I guess. And then they told me they wanted two videos, and for each video was $200 plus a product, which they sent for free, which is the $50 for the little thing. And then they sent me the little thing, the mixer. And then they told me I didn't really have to talk about it as long as I showed it in the videos. But in my other videos, I just kind of like show like I'm drinking it and show the thing, I don't talk about it. But in that one, I made it specifically just like showing my audience how to take it, what it helps with. Because I want, if I'm gonna promote something, I want my audience to know like kind of what it is and like the backstory and how it helps. So after you post the videos, you just send the link and then you get paid. It's that simple.
All right, I have a question for you because like I'm the ad communications professor here, and I just wanted to hear firsthand from an influencer, how much influence do you think you have over your viewing audience by way of like interactions, comments, likes, DMs, what has that been for you? And then I'll ask a follow-up question after that.
Of course. Yeah, so I get more interactions on my DMs on Instagram because in TikTok, well, now recently they just updated so you could DM your influencers. But before, my audience couldn't reach me through direct message, it would have to be comments. And they would usually always comment, like, because I post a lot of outfits. So like on my outfit details, like where to buy it from, and then my personality and stuff like that. And I think I love it because you post a question and say, I don't know if to choose this or this. And you get a lot of input, like you should do this because this, and this. And you can kind of just compare. And it's crazy to think that so many people have my back. And when I posted stuff because not that long ago I posted, I'm gonna be absent for a bit because like I'm gonna be traveling and stuff. I got a lot of messages like, oh, are you okay? Like we haven't seen you on TikTok that much. And it's crazy to think like, I don't know these people, but they know me. And the craziest thing was, I thought all my audience was like mostly in Mexico, but the other day when I was still in California, I went to a concert and two girls came up to me like, oh my God, I love your TikTok videos. Can I take a picture with you? And I was like, I was blown away. I thought it was so crazy. Like that's the first time anybody had asked me for a video. And I was like, I don't know, it was insane. I was like, it makes me really happy because you could influence a lot of people. And what I've noticed I've influenced the most is my clothes. Always, they're asking me for links or how much do they cost me, where can I buy it? Because that's what I post the most, right? So I don't know, it's honestly amazing.
And so my follow-up question to that is, what advice would you give to, say, students that are like looking to spread information, for example, organic information on organic production? What advice would you give them if they're posting content to an audience like yours? Because you have a younger audience, I'm supposing. Give us a little insight to that.
So I think you have to be very, very consistent. If you can post 2 times a day, 3 times a day, like do not give up on it. It's really hard in the beginning to actually get the numbers. But once you hit, I don't know, 5,000, 10,000, that's when you're gonna grow like fast. But do not give up. And then make your content fun. Don't like put the information, but make it in a fun way, relatable way. Like how you guys were asking like of students around campus, you guys can make videos like, I don't know, maybe giving them organic products to try and tell them the differences or things like that. Mm-hmm. But being consistent and making it relatable to your audience. Because if you're just like kind of sitting down, like talking, people are gonna most likely scroll. But if you're engaging with people, if you're being consistent, if you're being fun, if you're showing your personality, that's what social media loves.
And also, Violet, you didn't start with TikTok. You started through your YouTube channel that you tried multiple times. So how did that all like lead you into becoming a successful influencer?
Well, I tried YouTube, but it was very hard because I don't know how to edit. And then I remember I had Melissa when I was, I think I was like a sophomore. I was like, Melissa, you're going to record for me, and we're going to do this, and we're going to do that.
And I'll be the director and the editor, and you'll be the star. On my head
while I'm talking to the camera. But for YouTube, it's a lot harder to engage because it's longer videos. It's 10, 15 minute videos, and having to edit clips is a lot more work. TikTok, you put your phone up, it's a 3 minute video, you show your personality, you make it fun for them, and there, you got engagement.
Yeah.
But I started, when I first started TikTok, I had like, I remember one time I got 2,000 views on my TikTok, and I was like, oh my God, 2,000 people are seeing my stuff. Like, I come from Livingston. Like, Livingston is tiny. So for 2,000 people seeing my videos, it was insane. And like, now that I'm getting millions of views or hundreds of thousands, it's like crazy because I come from such a small town. So anybody could do it. Just be consistent, be fun. Like, I think you have to show your personality. I think that's what most engagement is. Like, you can't just like make little dances and like, no, if you show your personality, show who you are, show why you're passionate about the topic that you're talking about, is what's going to get you the most engagement.
Exactly. I think that that's a great way to just wrap up this. That's a great way to just wrap up this episode. I think that the things that you talked about, Valeria, about your personality and your image on social media and your aura and just how you are fun and creative is super, super helpful in terms of influencing others. And I think that all of us here as agricultural communicators, we can totally incorporate that into how we influence future generations about agriculture, because it's a super big industry and a lot of people aren't as passionate about it or have the information about it to be as passionate as we are. So I think that if we could learn a little bit from Valeria about influencing and just being our genuine selves and showing that passion to others about agriculture, that will be super helpful in the future moving on. So as we wrap up our podcast episode this morning, I hope that everyone was able to learn a little bit more about organics in the diet and in the influencer industry. I definitely learned so much from Valeria. Thank you so much again for joining us on the podcast today, as well as the panelists, Melissa, Dr. Grishup, and Dr. Mike. Just wrapping up, what was one of the most interesting things that we discussed today?
I'm gonna start. I'll start with the diets. I think diet culture on social media is like such a huge part of social media. I know how the algorithm works. You search for one thing and it thinks that's what you want in your entire life. So when I started looking, and interestingly enough, it was an Andrew Tate video, how he was talking about intermittent fasting and how it helped him. I just landed on it. I looked at it. It's whatever. And then that just spiraled into more and more intermittent fasting and the benefits of. So I enjoyed that part of the discussion.
Yeah. Dr. Grishup, any big takeaways from today?
Well, I just, you know, hearing about sort of the development of a social media career for me is just really fascinating.
It's very newfound.
It's you know, older Gen X. And,
yeah.
You know, I would probably still use a rotary dial phone for my basic communication if people would let me. Obviously, that doesn't happen. But
definitely.
But that's fascinating. To mirror what you said earlier, Natalie, I mean, it's so important that we get more of an agricultural message out to people, because, I mean, maybe this is one of my mantras, but we're all part of this food system. We're all important parts of this food system, whether we recognize it or not. And, you know, to have a voice in it, you need to be educated in it.
Exactly.
To move forward together, we've got to have a common language or lexicon. So all this is exceptionally important.
Yeah. Melissa, any big takeaways?
I think influence is a crazy thing in general, because like everything that we do in life influences someone or influences us, or like this conversation, that's going to influence us in some way.
Yeah, exactly. It's such an interesting cycle to just understand and grasp, and I think that that's just something really, really it's really interesting to me. And I think it'll be really interesting to see how that continues down the line, especially in terms of social media.
Yeah. So that's why we're ad comms.
Exactly. It interests us. So that's the end of our podcast episode today, unfortunately. Thank you again to the guest panelists for coming out today and sharing your expertise about organics and influencing and all of the things in between.
And follow Valeria. What's your plug real fast?
Valeria Carrasco 00. Just my name and last name with 2 zeros at the end.
Follow her real fast.
Follow her. All right. Thank you again. Live in 225 signing off.
Bye-bye.
Live in 225 is a production of the AGC 225 class at Cal Poly called Digital Communications and Agriculture. Program funding was provided by the California Certified Organic Farmers Foundation and the Transition to Organic Partnership Program. Our production team for this episode was Tegan Ellers and Melissa Frago. Our director for season one was Bella Anushian. Our host was Natalie Victorine. The executive producer, creator, and co-editor for the show was Moses Mike. Matt Greeshop was our co-producer. Our student panelist was Melissa Frago, and our guest for this episode was social media influencer Valeria Carrasco. Our audio technician was Tegan Ellers. Our managing editor was Melissa Frago. The video switching director was Griffin Wilson. Our vocal talent was Jared Mandrill. Background music by LVY Music from Pixabay. Intro and outro music by Alex Grohl from Pixabay. Thanks for joining us.